You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war, people who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a city shining on a hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, hello, everybody. You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Peter LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth about homosexuality. Our website is Americans for Truth. That's F-O-R, AmericansForTruth.org. Americans for Truth is a counter organization to the many, many better funded and much more rich organizations than ours, the homosexual activist lobby. You have the gays, the lesbians, the bisexuals, the transgenders. Now some of them are calling themselves queer. That's their word. And we're on the other side. And so if you are tired of the in-your-face gay activism that you see all around you, you can't open up a newspaper or watch a TV show without seeing some pro-homosexual message, or lately it's the gender confusion that comes through the so-called transgender movement, then our group is for you. And we are, again, AmericansForTruth.org. And tonight we're returning to our interview with Robert Knight, who is a senior writer and correspondent for Coral Ridge Ministries. Bob is also a friend of mine. He was my former boss for several years in Washington, and he's one of the real good guys in Washington, and also one of the world's leading experts from the conservative side on the homosexual issue. Welcome, Bob.
Hey, thank you, Peter.
Hey, well, thank you for all the work you've done over the years. I know it's a lonely struggle taking the other side of this increasingly politically incorrect issue, Bob. But how long have you actually been working on this?
I would say it began when I was at Heritage Foundation way back in 1991. And I stumbled onto the work of Alfred Kinsey and through Judith Riesman, who wrote a book exposing Kinsey.
Who is Kinsey?
Alfred C. Kinsey was the... You can call him the godfather of the sexual revolution. He gave the scientific foundation for it by publishing a study called Sexual Behavior in the Human Male in 1948, and then a female volume in 1953. And these are big, thick books full of charts and stats, and he interviewed thousands of people. And he came out with the idea that there's nothing really normal in sexuality. This is where the 10% estimate for homosexuality came from. He estimated that some ridiculous percentage of married women had had abortions. Those were, by the way, that turned up in footnotes in Roe v. Wade. And then Judith Riesman and her co-author Edward Eichel revealed that he'd used many fraudulent methods of obtaining information, that he cooked the books, he got rid of data that didn't fit the paradigm he wanted. The whole thing's a fraud, and and a later biography of Kinsey came out by James Jones, who was on the Kinsey board, and he's a known biographer, and he said that Kinsey was a very promiscuous homosexual who pursued all this to justify his own appetites, basically.
But, I remember reading the Jones book, Bob, and it's just amazing. He was the one who uncovered the secrets that Kinsey had, all sorts of things that he sort of swore people to silence, and he dug out those secrets.
Yeah, he did, and he did touch on the child sexuality data, which is at the heart of the Kinsey studies.
That's Table 34, right? Explain what Table 34 is.
Yeah, when I came to, I was at Heritage, and I left Heritage after I wrote a report on Kinsey, and it didn't go down well, and I ended up turning the report into a half-hour documentary video at Family Research Council called The Children of Table 34, and it's about Kinsey's use of information gained through pedophiles who molested kids and recorded their responses. And from that, he figured out a theory of child sexuality that goes like this, that children are sexual beings from birth, and you'll hear that phrase, Planned Parenthood uses it all the time, and the gay groups use it, sexual beings from birth are capable of pleasure and therefore are entitled to it at any age. And this is the animating principle behind much of what passes for sex education in this country, because the Kinsey people, his disciples, went on to form the accreditation committees that actually accredit sex educators in this country. They did it at key institutions like New York University. And so what you had was a concerted effort to change America's opinions on everything to do with sex, especially homosexuality, by a massive tome of distorted science. And the media ran with it. They gave Kinsey tremendous publicity. They never looked too close at his stats or how he got them. And he really wasn't unmasked until 1990 when Judith Riesman and Ed Eichel came out with their book, Kinsey, Sex, and Fraud.
Yeah, and Bob, let's return again to that table. This is table 34. It actually has, you know, it's pedophiles' reports of his so-called orgasms, stimulating orgasms in babies and infants. It's just the sickest
right up to,
thing.
Yeah, 2 months old to 15 years of age.
Yeah, and what just struck me about it when I saw it for the first time was, here's this book. But what was the publisher? Some major publisher?
Yeah, it was. And if you hold on, I'll grab it. I've got it right here.
It was a very famous publisher, and
it's a publisher of very well thought of academic books. It's here it is. W.B. Saunders Company out of Philadelphia and London.
Right, and so here's this book, and the press had been eagerly awaited. He did a masterful job of baiting the press, teasing them. This book was going to come out, this groundbreaking book on sexuality. And here is inside this book a table about how various children at the various ages and how long their orgasms took to, you know, how many orgasms they had, supposedly these very young children. Weren't they babies?
Yeah. Well, they were all ages from 2 months right up to 15 years of age, and I think the most shocking stat, and the one that kind of brings it home, is the 4-year-old boy who supposedly had I think it was like 26 orgasms in a 24-hour period.
Oh,
and so this poor kid was molested around the clock while this pedophile took notes.
And if that weren't bad enough... Here we have, you're a former editor at the Los Angeles Times. You began
right.
your career in the media. Why didn't one single mainstream journalist at the time make a huge story of the fact that this icon, this Dr. Alfred Kinsey, had basically published pedophile data?
I think it's because very few of them read it. You know, it's one of those big books that was a buzz book, and it was talked about, and a lot of people discussed it without ever having read it, because it's daunting. You look at it, it's just loaded with charts and statistics and so forth.
But Bob,
a lot of reporters are lazy and also on deadline, so they don't really dive into these things.
But had somebody dove into it, I should say, couldn't they have busted a major story? They might have even brought down Alfred Kinsey.
Well, they could have brought him down at the time. It would have disgraced him. You know, he's lost a lot of his star image. This stuff has gotten out there. The Lancet, the very respected British medical journal, looked at Kinsey, Sex, and Fraud and said it demolishes Kinsey's reputation. So it's gotten out there slowly that Kinsey was a fraud. But he's still very respected in academia. As Judith Riesman points out in her later book, Kinsey, Crimes and Consequences, that Kinsey is still the most cited sex researcher in law journals and court cases.
And here he is, a pervert, and he was a pervert.
Oh, yeah, big time.
And that was revealed by the Jones book, and he published pedophile data. So let's go fast forward to today, Bob. You know, you're in Washington, and you're seeing the media more than ever covering up and covering for the homosexual movement. How has the change gone? Give us the last 20 years. How have you seen the evolution of the media and reporting on this issue?
Well, the media began by portraying homosexuals as victims, but still gave the other side some ink and broadcast time. Because after all, the other side was most of America who thought that homosexuality was, a misplaced sexuality, something wrong, something maybe even harmful. And curiously enough, that really changed in the 80s, most of all. Right. Well, to do a timeline, I'll do it real quick. The big change came in 1973 when homosexual activists stormed the American Psychiatric Association and got them to take homosexuality out of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. They did it on no new research. It was purely political, as one pro-gay writer said. And a number of writers, psychologists and psychiatrists on the other side, have said that they really played it brilliantly. They mau-mau'd these people. They'd call them up in the middle of the night. They threatened violence at the next APA convention. Then the gay lobby paid for a mailing to something like 10,000 psychiatrists, and they got back a majority agreeing that homosexuality should be taken out. But the majority was only of the responses that they got, which was a minority of the number they mailed out. So you had a minority in the mail, a tainted mailing, because it was packaged by the National Gay Task Force. But curiously enough, 4 years later, in 1977, there was a survey of dynamically oriented psychiatrists. That is, people who feel you can have behavioral change by giving people therapy. It was something like 68% agreed that homosexuality was a treatable disorder. So, while it was taken out of the diagnostic manual, the profession went on to treat it. Now, a lot of these guys had people coming in their office saying, I got these unwanted desires, I don't know what to do about them.
So people are still
trying to criminalize that.
Right, now they're going to criminalize people being treated to get rid of their homosexual desires. We're talking to Robert Knight, who's a writer with Coral Ridge Ministries and author of Radical Rulers, an excellent new book about the Obama administration. You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour, WYLL. We'll be right back in a minute. Listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. We have part two of our interview with Bob Knight, who's a good friend of mine and my former boss at Family Research Council and Concerned Women for America. Bob is a writer with the senior writer with Coral Ridge Ministries, and he's just a great American. Bob is one of the foremost conservative experts in the world on the homosexual issue and basically the whole sexual revolution. He's written a new book called Radical Rulers, The White House Elites Who Are Pushing America. Bob, give me like a one-minute description of the book.
Well, it's it summarizes the background of Barack Obama himself, because some of the radical ties and influences surfaced briefly during the campaign, but they were quickly snuffed out by the media, which airbrushed his image. So I provide everything documented, nothing speculative. And then I took 12 of his czars, and I said, these people are in enormously influential positions of power, and they happen to be very radical, and here they are. And there's a thumbnail sketch of each czar. So the overall picture is a radical administration really trying to remake America, as the president has said.
Well, two of those czars, briefly here, one is specifically tied to the bill that I want to focus on, ENDA, which is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which is coming up for a vote very soon in the House of Representatives. Tell us about Kai Feldblum.
Well, Kai is credited as the author of ENDA. She's been at it for years. In fact, I sat on a panel with Kai, and I testified against ENDA back in 1994.
Tell us what ENDA is again.
The Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And it adds sexual orientation and gender identity to federal workplace law and affects every employer in America with 15 or more employees. And the proponents like to say, well, there's a religious exemption, so you Christians don't have to worry about it. Yeah, the exemption applies only to strictly religious bodies like churches themselves. It doesn't affect Christian-run camps, radio stations, bookstores, you name it, or businesses run by Christians or devout Jews who don't want to be promoting homosexuality with their family benefits. So it would basically turn biblical morality about sex into a form of bigotry, actionable under the law like racism.
Okay, so let me clarify this, Bob. I'm an Orthodox Jew, and I've got a daycare center. I believe in biblical sexual morality. I believe homosexuality, indeed all sex outside of marriage, is gravely immoral. I've got my daycare center. We're raising kids, and lo and behold, we're growing. And I hire my 15th employee. That includes part-time, right?
Sure it does.
Okay, my 15, this is, some are part-time, some are full-time, but I have 15 employees now. A homosexual activist comes in, or maybe a transgender activist, a guy in a dress, and they want a job overseeing children. Under ENDA, could I not factor in their homosexual behavior in that job hiring position, circumstance?
No, you couldn't. It would be actionable. They could bring a lawsuit against you and cite ENDA. Or they could call the Equal Opportunity or Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, to which Kai Feldblum, the ENDA author, has been appointed. She got a recess appointment from President Obama in early April, actually in March, late March, along with 14 other appointees. And he had to do this because she probably wouldn't have gotten through the Senate. She has such a radical record. Kai Feldblum signed a statement called Beyond Marriage that advocates for multiple partner relationships to be recognized, which would be completely the end of marriage. She has said that she couldn't think of a single instance in which religious liberty would triumph or trump gay rights.
Okay, so let me hold you there, Bob. She's talked about the zero-sum game. Explain how she sees the zero-sum game between religious liberty, people's right to live by their religious or moral creed, and the homosexual activist, you know, legislation.
Yeah, she's exactly right, and she's one of the more candid gay activists, because it is a zero-sum game, meaning somebody wins, somebody loses. When you advance rights of some people, you have to take away certain rights of other people who may not want to recognize the rights of the first party. This originated in the civil rights movement, where America, as a country, decided we had to give up some basic rights to accommodate redress for black Americans who suffered slavery and then Jim Crow laws. So we said, okay, well, you may own a private business, but you can't discriminate on the basis of race. And America said, okay, that's a trade-off. The business owner's going to have to give up a little freedom in order to make sure that we don't have a racist country. Okay, we made that bargain. But now the homosexual activists came along and said, well, we're just like black people. We've been oppressed, and we want the special protections built into the law based on our status as gays. That's our identity. But here's the difference. Being black or being white or Hispanic has no moral component at all, as Colin Powell once pointed out. It's a benign characteristic. But sexual behavior has everything to do with morality. I mean, it goes down to, that's why we even have marriage. We channel sexuality into marriage. So when the homosexuals come along and say, well, we're going to have identical protections, like minorities have been accorded, they are transferring the moral capital, the black civil rights movement, to their cause, and they're turning people who believe in traditional morality into outlaws.
And this ultimately seems to be the goal of many gay activists. I won't say every gay activist. There are some that say, yes, you have the right to your belief, but many gay activists seem to be moving towards this sort of censorious, almost totalitarian position, where they want to squelch our right to act on our right to speak on our moral beliefs.
Well, as Kai said in an unguarded moment, well, gays win, Christians lose. She did.
Okay, so translate that into our Orthodox Jewish daycare business owner. He's got his 15th employee. There's all sorts of possibilities. There could be a setup lawsuit. Explaining about that setup lawsuit in that case in New Mexico, right, with the Christian photographer. Explain about that again.
Yeah, let's go right into a real case. We talk about hypotheticals a lot. This is a real case. A husband and wife photography business team in New Mexico were approached by a lesbian who said, I want you to photograph our commitment ceremony. And they said, well, we're Christians, and we don't want to be a part of that. We can recommend other photographers who will do a bang-up job for you, but we can't be a part of that. So she went away and had her partner then call a couple weeks later and pretend she was going to need a photographer for a marriage ceremony. And they gave her a rate list and so forth. Then the The other lesbian went to the New Mexico Human Rights Commission and filed an official complaint against the Christian photography studio saying they'd violated the state's sexual orientation law. They were hauled before the commission. The commission ruled that they had to pay all the legal costs of the lesbians, which was over $6,000. So they appealed that ruling to a court, and the court upheld the ruling of the Human Rights Commission. So basically, they're saying, you Christians can't run the business the way you want. We're going to force you to violate your conscience, or we're going to make you pay for it. That's what the whole country is in for if ENDA passes.
And ENDA is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, the federal bill. It's Nancy Pelosi says it could be up for a vote very soon. The numbers on that in the Senate side, it's Senate Bill 1584. It's 1584. On the House side, it's 3017, H.R. 3017. And Bob, an important point about that New Mexico case, that Human Rights Commission was empowered by the passage of a, quote, sexual orientation non-discrimination law in New Mexico a few years earlier, right?
Yeah, yes, and a similar case occurred in New Jersey, where the Methodist Camp Association was told they had to stage lesbian commitment ceremonies in their seaside pavilion, which they rented out to groups, or they were in violation of the state's sexual orientation law. And they said, hey, we're a religious group. We can't do this. This goes against biblical values. And the Human Rights Commission in New Jersey said, tough. We're removing your tax exemption for that property because you will not accommodate these people doing a ceremony that you find sinful. So you see how they're reaching out using the law and twisting it to suppress religious liberty.
Now, the New Jersey sexual orientation law was also the basis by which the Boy Scouts of America were sued, right?
Perfect. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, the Dale case.
Explain that one.
That was an assistant scoutmaster who had left the scouts after he was outed for being gay. I guess he was marching in a gay pride parade.
So not much privacy there, not private conduct. He was publicly flaunting his homosexuality.
Yes, he was. And then he reapplied to be an assistant scoutmaster. And the scouts said, well, you can't do this. We can't have gay men being scoutmasters. So he...
Now, wait, before you go on, Bob, really quick here. Apply that to a heterosexual situation. I have daughters. As nice as you are, as much as I trust you, I still wouldn't want you to go out and be at a camping situation with my young girls.
Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't put men in charge of young girls and take them camping overnight. I mean, you just wouldn't. Why tempt people? But in this case with homosexuals, I will say it's even worse because the opportunities are greater. Men's sex drive is stronger. And
there's been thousands and thousands of abuse cases, child abuse cases in the Boy Scouts of America from homosexuals,
well,
right?
Yeah, you know, and here's the irony of the ACLU. The ACLU is forever filing complaints against the Boy Scouts for not having gay scoutmasters. And at the same time, the ACLU is accusing the Catholic Church of not protecting its young men in there because so many have been molested by homosexual priests. So, because they want to bash the Catholic Church. So, on the one hand, the scouts are trying to do the right thing and avoid the situation that the Catholic Church got in, and for that, they're being hauled into court. They're being thrown out of United Way chapters. They're being denied public facilities, even after they won their Supreme Court case in 2000.
Wow. Yeah, they set their sights on the Boy Scouts, and they haven't let go. The homosexual activists are still crusading against them, and it's just appalling.
It is. The Scouts are one of the greatest organizations in American history. Millions of young men have gone through and become better men for it. And to go after that group, you know, with all the problems our youth have with drugs and sex and crime and everything, and going after one of the few groups that has a proven track record of success is just... I can't say they have these boys or our country's best interests at heart.
I don't think so. I don't trust the ACLU on that one. We're talking to Robert Knight, who's a writer for Coral Ridge Ministries and the author of Radical Rulers. We'll be right back in a minute. Well, hello, everybody. everybody. My name is Peter LaBarbera. You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour program put on by the Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, of which I am president. Americans for Truth is a counter to the powerful gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender movement. We are vastly outfunded. I'm talking about the pro-family side versus the homosexual side. But the one thing that they lack is the truth. And we're in part two of our interview with Robert Knight, who is truly one of the heroes of the pro-family movement in fighting the homosexual activist movement. He could have done many other things with his time, but by fighting this cause, he probably was somewhat more limited in his professional work, because the homosexual movement tars and feathers anybody who would dare take them on. Is that an exaggeration, Bob?
No, this is definitely a career narrower. When you take these folks on, other people are so frightened by them. And that's one thing they've achieved with their strategy. It's called jamming. And it's in the book After the Ball, a gay strategy manual by two public relations experts from Harvard.
And that was written in the 80s, right?
That was written in 89, and it's a brilliant blueprint for changing America's views on homosexuality. And it has everything in it, from desensitization techniques to advertising. And then jamming is to punish people for having the wrong opinion so publicly that people feel ashamed even for having that thought. And so you see, even conservative talk show hosts now don't want to do the homosexual issue because they've gotten jammed by the gay activists, who hound them and start accusing them of all kinds of things. And they found out that that kind of abuse works. It works well to shut people up.
Right. And now tell us about a historical case, Dr. Laura Schlesinger.
Well, yeah, Dr. Laura was kind of pro-gay for years, and then she became an Orthodox Jew. She returned to her roots, and she realized that there was a God-given plan for human sexuality. So she started talking about it on her show. And she'd have callers call in and talk about homosexuality, and she'd say, well, I'm sorry, it's not natural. People aren't born that way. She had met some people that had overcome it, and she said, you know, this isn't what they're making it out to be. And the gay activists went nuts, called her a hater. She had just started a new TV show, and they went after all the sponsors. They made such a nuisance of themselves that she had to shut down the TV show within a couple of episodes.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, Bob, but I remember we did talk about this in the last time, but the long and short of it is they really just took on somebody as powerful as Dr. Laura, and they even, you know, brought her down and shrunk her to size to the point where she apologized in the liberal media, and they've done it to Rush Limbaugh. They've done it, and you're right about the talk show hosts. I was shocked to see Mike Gallagher, who's a top 10 radio talker. He calls himself a happy conservative. Mike Gallagher is now pretty much pro-homosexual on every issue but same-sex marriage. It's astonishing to see the capitulation within conservative circles.
Yeah, you wonder how conservative someone can be if they don't understand that there is a God-given human sexuality and that marriage is God's expression of it. In fact, God thinks so much of marriage that he made it the paradigm for the church's relationship with Jesus Christ. I mean, that's how sacred the relationship is, the marriage relationship. So for people to come along and say, well, we don't need that anymore, and it's arbitrary, and we're going to do something really odd and call it marriage, is a tremendous finger in the eye of God. And you know, you have to ask people, don't you see the larger implications of this? Do you think there's anything natural, normal, healthy? Do you think about biology at all, and the male and female bodies, how they fit and complement each other? You know, don't you see any design here? Well, they don't want to see it because it interferes with their conception of anything goes. And that's really what's fueled the sexual revolution, and it's fueled the media treatment of it, because a lot of reporters and editors don't want to be bound by moral strictures any more than anyone else.
Right. Well, before we get back to ENDA, this important bill that's coming up for a vote that federalizes homosexual, pro-homosexual workplace law, you know, the conservatives, it's amazing to me, Bob. I mean, even Dennis Prager, I think, who is a conservative Jewish talk show host, great guy.
Yeah, but I think incisive.
He came out for civil unions, and I thought, wait a minute, I remember seeing something where Dennis Prager teaches that our rights come from God.
Yeah.
So what right to civil union legislation? Where does that right or law come from? If our rights come from God, how does he get support for civil unions, which is going to normalize ungodly homosexual relationships?
I would say that's an enormous blind spot in an otherwise brilliant mind. Because Dennis Prager, at his best, is brilliant and takes complex topics and simplifies them, makes sense out of them. Michael Medved's very good at that, too. But on this topic, I don't know whether it's some, you know, personal connection or whether he just doesn't want to, you know, be viewed as a bigot or whatever, but that it's out of character and it's out of sync with what he has propounded as his value system.
Well, I think it's a combination of factors, Bob. In some cases, it's the power politics that you talked about, in which the homosexual and transgender activists excel. In other circumstances, it's perhaps just a well-placed homosexual activist. I heard that a major talk show host, I don't want to say which one, on TV and radio, has a gay producer. And,
yeah.
You know,
it's veto power, isn't it?
It's veto power because yeah. I don't really trust a gay activist to do fair and balanced reporting on this issue. But now let's get back to Enda, Bob. You were talking about the state situations like the New Mexico photographer's case, the New Jersey case with the Methodist Center. Talk about how Enda, now we're talking about the federalizing it. Federal power must be, I mean, you have more potential for a damaging lawsuit if the feds get involved, don't you?
Oh, my goodness, yes. That you can bring the whole wrath of the federal government down on your head. That's why I'm, you know, other than the jamming of people opposing homosexuality, you'd think the business community would be totally lined up against Enda because it's a field day for gay attorneys to harass businesses and make an endless series of demands. And what some of the businesses don't understand is that when they give in to the first demand, it's just the beginning. There are always many more demands, and they get more and more difficult to accommodate. And pretty soon they find themselves caving in to the whole gay agenda. And the employees they have who have traditional values are then silenced, are then punished, are then put out of business.
But businesses very already are caving. You know, we see all these Fortune 500 companies adopting these radical pro-homosexual policies. And as bad as that is, a private company has the right to implement these policies. But when the federal government gets involved, that means immediately every state in America that does not have a sexual orientation law now becomes a homosexual activist workplace state, right? I mean, we're talking like Oklahoma and Texas. The moment that God forbid Obama, this passes and Obama signs in the Employment Non-Discrimination Act into law, every state in the union becomes a gay activist state now.
You're right. This is the end game for them. This and gay marriage and capturing the military. These are the three main objectives now that they've got the hate crimes law passed.
Why is this so important? Why is this one of the foundational laws? And we're talking about the Employment Non-Discrimination Act that federalizes sexual orientation law.
Because everybody needs a job, and it would affect virtually every workplace in America. And that's a cultural sea change where to get along and keep your way, making a living to support your family, you have to silence yourself or you have to accommodate whatever the next demand is by the homosexual activists. And once you equate race with sexual behavior and then face the demands get worse and worse and worse. I mean, how can the Defense of Marriage Act hold up? Which is the federal definition of marriage and allows states not to be forced to accommodate relationships that aren't in sync with their own definition of marriage. I don't see how it could once you get the logic of sexual orientation and you say, well, that diversity and equality trump all other considerations, even the recognition of what marriage really is. So say you're a small employer in Oklahoma. You got 17 employees. And one of them, it turns out to be gay, and, you know, it was never an issue before, but they say, you know, at the company picnic, you ask people to bring their families. I want to bring my partner. And so the guy brings his partner, and then they make out in front of the other employees. What are you going to do about it? Under ENDA, if you say even a word, you could be slapped with a discrimination lawsuit. You could have federal enforcers descend on your business. This is what America doesn't really seem to understand yet, that these are coercive laws. Laws aren't suggestions. They're the use of power. And when you put something in place like sexual orientation, which is a distortion of civil rights law, all hell breaks loose. Now, think of this, going to a baseball game. And I think this happened in
Seattle.
Anaheim.
In Seattle, I think.
Was it, was it Seattle, where a guy had taken his young children to the baseball game, and two lesbians stood up and made out right in front of the kids. And so the father complained to the usher, who said, you know, please don't do that. You know, you're ruining it for everybody. And the lesbian said, oh, we have a perfect right. You know, husbands and wives kiss. Why can't we? See, they equate their perverse behavior with what is normal and healthy, and then challenge you to say anything about it.
Yeah, and I remember Bill O'Reilly talking about that on the air with on Fox News, on his show on Fox, and he said, well, the issue isn't homosexual behavior. It's public displays of affection. Baloney.
No.
If I was at a baseball game and you hugged your wife or kissed your wife there and my kids were there, I mean, as long as you weren't, you know, starting to go overboard, I mean, it's fine. It's an affirmation of normal family. But comparing that homosexuality to that is not right.
Right, but when you put sexual orientation in the law, all of this comes spilling out. And to put it in a federal law like ENDA is very dangerous.
Wow. This is incredible, Bob. We got 50 seconds to break. Talk about the transgender aspect of this radical law.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Peter, because they didn't dare do this a couple of years ago when ENDA almost passed. In fact, it split the gay coalitions because Barney Frank, the gay congressman from Massachusetts, who's the main sponsor, said, oh, America won't buy that, men in dresses, so just keep a lid on it and we'll get that later. This time around, they're going for the whole thing. They have gender identity in there. So businesses will have to accommodate cross-dressing men, and it gets very complicated because at what point do you accommodate them? When they just think they're like women? Before they have a sex change? During? And the employer is always under the gun. You either accommodate or we're coming after you.
Okay, we'll come right back with Robert Knight. We're at his Americans for Truth Hour. We'll talk to you in a minute. We're in our final segment of part two of our interview with Robert Knight of the Coral Ridge Ministries. Robert is Bob. He's a good friend of mine and my former boss. And he's the author of Radical Rulers, the White House Elites Who Are Pushing. What's the full title on that, Bob?
Pushing America Toward Socialism.
Oh, socialism. Wow.
Yep.
Well, this is I haven't read the book yet. I can't wait to get it. But Bob, we were talking in the break about something disturbing with regard to the homosexual agenda and experimentation among youth. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I have a friend who knows a lot of Catholic priests, and he said they have said that they are very disturbed because increasingly during confessions, teenagers increasingly are admitting experimenting with homosexuality, both boys and girls, because it's become so cool in schools. And, of course, you know, this is when you're developing your sexual roadmap in early adolescence, this is one of the most damaging things you can do because you're stuck with the behavior and you're stuck with these images and sensations. And that's why we keep kids away from sex until they're mature. Because it does have profound impacts on you. But I think this undercuts the gay claim that, oh, there's a certain percentage of the population. They used to say it was 10. Now they admit it's far less than that, more like less than 3%, are born that way and can't change, and it has nothing to do with promoting homosexuality. And yet we see an upsurge in experimentation. So in many cases, it's a learned behavior. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who have these desires and don't know how they got them, who don't want them. But in other cases, it's becoming the cool thing to do, which is very scary.
Yeah, and the coming out ages when people announce their homosexuality to the world, as it were, are going lower and lower, and that testifies to the power and reach of the homosexual movement.
That's right. Within schools, where they're promoting it, it's just something, just a normal variation of sexuality, and certainly in the teen culture, where, you know, I kissed a girl, being sung by a girl, they're pushing it.
And, yes.
And they're daring anyone to say it's wrong.
Now, Bob, back to ENDA, which is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, a radical piece of legislation that will be voted on soon. In the House, it's H.R. 3017. In the Senate, it's 1584. We urge you to call your congressmen and senators on that legislation. But under ENDA, which federalizes so-called sexual orientation law and gender identity law, you're essentially creating a situation where no teacher could be fired or not hired due to his homosexuality and transsexuality. And this would be in every state, including very conservative states like Texas and Oklahoma. Basically, we're talking about transgender teachers, homosexual teachers, having that special protection in the classroom, right?
Well, you are, because that's a profession and it's a workplace. And if you say that that you can't discriminate in any way based on sexual orientation or gender identity, and you have a teacher who says, "Well, you know what? I'm a fourth grade teacher, and I've decided I'm going to become a woman. This is a guy, and I'm just going to show up the next day in a dress and a wig, and you can't do anything about it." He'd be right. They couldn't do anything about it. It's that scary.
Give us a real-life example of a school situation.
Well, actually, there was one in Pennsylvania it was a bus driver, a guy named Bob. he decided he wanted to be a woman after years of driving the bus as a guy, and he came to work in a dress and dared the school officials to do anything about it. And under their policy, they said, we can't have this because it's disturbing to parents and kids, and I don't know what happened to Bob, but that's the kind of claim you're going to be seeing a lot of.
Yeah.
You know, Bob will have the law on his side. The parents won't.
Yeah. And let's cut to the bigger picture, Bob. You know, for years and years, the liberals lectured us, don't impose your morality. Now they're using the government to impose their immorality on people who disagree with their lifestyle.
Oh, yeah. Here's an example. Just, you know, they're trying to lift the ban on homosexuality in the military. Think of the impact on all the thousands of chaplains in the military who will not be allowed to tell the truth about what the Bible says about sexuality, because then the military would say, "Well, I'm sorry, you're out of line. You're discriminating on the basis of sexual orientation, and so therefore you're going to be denied promotions. You won't be assigned where you want to be assigned. We will forbid you to hold workshops and Bible studies." I mean, some terrible things are coming unless this is turned around.
Yeah, now that brings me to the, we've got 4 minutes left, Bob. Talk about the Obama administration agenda. Do they favor a law that would actually apply a sexual orientation code to the military?
Yeah, they do. They want to overturn the bar on homosexuality in the military that was passed in 1993 by huge margins in Congress and signed by Bill Clinton. Later, Clinton altered the policy, made it don't ask, don't tell, which still has worked pretty well over the years. Fewer than 1,000 people are ejected or discharged from the military for homosexuality every year. I think it's 13,000 since 94. Which is nothing in a military that has literally had millions of people go through it in the last few years. It's less than 1% of all discharges. But if you have an open homosexuality, which is what the Obama administration is arguing for, you'll have so many problems with forced intimacy because it violates the modesty of the men and women who have to serve alongside in very intimate situations, shared showers and bunks, rooms, and et cetera. But it also will bring a chilling form of political correctness in the military where it'll be a career ender if you make it clear that you have biblical values, that you're a traditionalist. And it just so happens we draw most of our military from the South and other areas that have a high degree of traditionalism and religious belief. So this is an arrow aimed right at our military.
And then, of course, it also sets the standard for society, just like the military's bar on racism. That was a huge event. This will be used to force this on the rest of the culture also, because the military is seen as an example for the rest of society.
Yeah, David Horowitz, who was a radical leftist for years and edited Ramparts magazine, the Marxist magazine, wrote a booklet called Queer Revolution a few years ago, in which he said he sat around with the activists and they said, "How can we best wreck America, you know, make it a communist country?" And he said, "Well, we have to do two things. We have to put women in combat and homosexuals in the military, and that will break the moral fiber of this country."
Wow.
So here they are. Here they're going at it right now, trying to bring that about. But Americans don't have to take it. More than 1,160 retired generals and admirals have signed a petition saying leave the policy the way it is. And, of course, you won't see active duty generals saying anything because they would get disciplined immediately. General Peter Pace, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was asked point blank, what do you think about homosexuality in the military? And he said, I don't think there's any place for it. It's immoral. He wasn't reappointed as Joint Chiefs chairman right after that.
It's incredible the power they have and at the same time claiming the victim status. What's up with that?
Well, that's how they get by. They've been claiming to be victims, and that's part of the after-the-ball strategy that we referenced earlier. In fact, the authors said, look, we're not going to get Americans to agree that our behavior is normal or healthy or admirable, but if we can get them to think of us as victims, we're going to win this.
Yeah.
And they're anything but victims. They have political power and economic power and even educational power far beyond the average American. They're a pampered minority that is forcing their values on everybody else.
Well, Bob, with that, we're going to have to end our interview, and I just thank you for a great 2 hours of talking there and very good stuff. Bob is the author of Radical Rulers. It's available at radicalrulers.com. It's about the radical czars in the Obama administration. He's a writer for Coral Ridge Ministry. You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour. Our website is americansfortruth.org, americansfortruth.org. Please come back next week. We have many good shows. Visit us at americansfortruth.org, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war, people who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.